see that?
Mm-hmm.
The red thing.
What's the time of one side of the tape?
60 minutes.
60 minutes. Yeah, okay. Well, I certainly will go on longer than 60 minutes. Okay. Well, as I was saying, in this initial address that he made to the faculty on February 28th, 1961, he was outlining his ideas for the organization of the institution and its future, and he addressed the question of the graduate faculty. And then turned to the question of the College of Arts and Sciences. I hadn't remembered this. The loose and unbalanced confederation of divisions should be joined and strengthened under the leadership of an imaginative academician. The humanities division is comparatively strong, followed by the division of social sciences, which, however, lacks a diversity of viewpoint due probably to its small size. And then he points out the division of science and mathematics is weak, particularly in the biological sciences. I assume that's why he thought there should be a separate division of biological sciences so it could be diversified and increased in size. At any rate, he did propose a dean of arts and sciences as soon as possible with four divisions: physical sciences and mathematics, biological sciences, social sciences, and humanities. New and bold departmental structures should be evolved within these divisions. Then he went on to the College of Engineering and actually endorsed the report which I referred to earlier, which is called Suggested Engineering Curriculum for a State University on Long Island, and supported the elimination of what he calls the anachronistic and meaningless departmental specializations such as mechanical engineering, civil engineering. Ad infinitum is long overdue in many colleges of engineering, and proposed the elimination of departmental structures along the lines proposed there. Then he went on to talk about some of his ideas, including the naming or establishment of three distinguished professorships in each college with salaries of the order of $25,000, which was big money in those days. These professorships could be financed entirely from endowments or from a combination of basic university salary and endowment. Comment on research, that it should be conducted by the faculty in all cases, should involve the participation of students. And then enunciate the principle that no faculty member's basic salary, whether in whole or part, should be contingent upon the availability of external grants for research. Talk a little bit about consulting responsibilities, and then finally commented upon Sunwood, which he calls the beautiful faculty club presented by Mr. Ward Melville, and refers to his gift of $25,000 per annum for 6 years for the operation of the faculty club. He keeps talking about a first-class club. President Lee was certainly liked things first class. He would only go to the finest restaurants. I remember I once went to lunch with him at an elegant Italian restaurant in Glen Cove, the name of which escapes me after all these years, but it was, I must say, one of the fanciest lunches I'd ever had, but he certainly took that as a matter of course. And he tells some of the posts that he hopes to fill. I see there's an interesting statement here. Any university that starves either the humanities or the sciences or technology is a medievalist institution, not having the intelligence to know it is dead or dying. And he talks about a number of other posts which he hopes to fill. And then points out that 4 degrees, the AB, the AM, the SM, and the PhD degrees have been approved by the Board of Trustees and have also been approved by the Committee on Higher Education, the Board of Regents. Formal approval of the Board of Regents is expected in the very near future. Those were, as I recall, those were general authorizations for those degrees and did not involve any particular subject matter or our focus.
Okay.
Going to double the library staff, new admissions director, launch a number of funds, drives, and so on. And then he closes by saying, during the past few months, your administration has made a Herculean effort to provide you with the type and level of support you will need to create a university to stand with the finest in the nation.
That's a quote from the Heald report.
I see, yes. Only the faculty, through its genius and effort, can make the dream of a distinguished university come true. You have an exciting and demanding task to perform. Now, I think it's fair to say that, sorry?
You said that was saying all the right things.
All the right things. I think it's, I think everyone who attended that meeting was very pleased by what they heard. They thought that they had chosen the right man and that the future was bright. President Lee addressed a group of that size in a what I would consider a rather imperious or pompous manner. That was just his nature. But he was really put on quite an elegant appearance and certainly said the right things. Well, as a part of this administrative reorganization, the Division of Biological Sciences was created, removed from the Division of Science and Mathematics, and I was appointed chairman of that division. We were not consulted about that at all, but we took it on as a challenge and as an opportunity to expand the role of biological sciences. We made this announcement in Science Magazine and other national media, and I think we attracted quite a bit of attention to the fact that the division had been created and that we were planning to expand rather quickly in a number of areas. The honeymoon with President Lee did not last very long, however. The divisional chairman ran into problems almost immediately. The president behaved in a very autocratic way. He almost completely ignored faculty governance. He made decisions unilaterally, which were then announced. It was very difficult to know exactly where you stood as a divisional chairman in charge of a certain component of the academic program. It also turned out that he could be quite vindictive and did not hesitate to ridicule or punish those who did not fall into line with his ideas. He also had great and unrealistic ideas about a lot of things. He had big dreams, apparently. One of the things he wanted to do was establish a helicopter link between the Oyster Bay campus and the Stony Brook campus so that people could be shuttled back and forth with great ease. And he also had envisioned the size of the Stony Brook campus as being one which warranted the building of a circular railroad around the campus so that people could move from building to building in an expeditious way. These ideas and others, I suspect, were certainly attracted a lot of attention in Albany. And although I can't know for sure what budget he submitted in the spring of 1961, I can almost guess that it was far beyond what the coffers of State University at that time could afford. We tried over the months of March and April to accommodate to the president, and in particular to follow his suggestions. I'll just put aside a bit of a chapter with one of the examples in biological sciences for the moment to give you the main outline of what happened. The divisional chairman, who at that time were Harold Ziskin in humanities and Jay Williams in the social sciences, Bill Lister in science, physical sciences, mathematics, and myself in the biological sciences, at about the same time came to the conclusion that it was really impossible to serve as the academic link between the administration and our own faculty members. And we had a number of meetings and eventually decided that in good conscience we could not continue in those positions of administrative responsibility. So we decided that we would resign our posts. We didn't start out to make this any kind of a concerted effort, but the more we talked about it, the more we realized that the problems were very widespread on the campus, not only in our own divisions, as we had thought. We requested a meeting with President Hamilton, divisional chairman, did. And we received a memo addressed to Dean Olson, Dean Irvine, Professor Lister, Professor Jay Williams, Professor Erk, Professor Ziskind, from President Lee. Subject: meeting in New York City with President Hamilton and President Lee. President Hamilton and I request your presence at a meeting to be held at the offices of the State University of New York in Manhattan at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, May the 27th. A station wagon will be available in front of Cole Hall to transport us to Manhattan. It is scheduled to leave at 9:20 a.m. The purpose of the meeting is to afford President Hamilton an opportunity to outline the responsibilities of this administration, the changed character of the institution, and to offer his encouragement to all of us in this trying period of adjustment. Well, we all converged upon Manhattan. I can't remember, truthfully, whether we rode in the station wagon or not. But at any rate, we all converged upon Manhattan and met with President Tom Hamilton and President Lee. President Lee asked us one by one to indicate our reactions to the first several months of President Lee's administration. Bill Lister, I think, did the best job. He was secretary of the faculty, the best job in detailing what we found problematical in terms of faculty governance, not being able to communicate with the president, having numerous instances of decisions made without any kind of faculty involvement, decisions which dramatically affected the academic program and the members of the faculty, and ended by submitting his resignation in writing. And then the rest of us followed along and gave our own versions and verified what in fact had been said, and we all submitted our resignations around the table at that day. President Lee and, so far as I remember, Dean Irvine said nothing at that time. And Tom Hamilton listened impassively during all of this presentation. And
At the end, he said, "This is the saddest day of my life." And he stood up, and we stood up, and the meeting was clearly over.
No discussion back and forth after that.
No discussion. As a matter of fact, we happened to ride down in the elevator with Tom Irvine. I think Lee stayed behind, if I remember. Rode down the elevator with Tom Irvine, and there wasn't a word spoken all the way down. And I don't know, I remember what floor it's on, but a very high floor. and so we parted. My letter of resignation was dated on that day, I suppose, May 27th. And it was not until in July sometime that I got a response. And the response came not from Hamilton, but from John Lee, who said, July 28th, 1961, "President Hamilton has approved my recommendation that your resignation as chairman of the Division of Biological Sciences be accepted. Please consider the effective date of your resignation to be the date of this letter. My hope is that we can now move forward towards a solution of the many problems with which we are confronted. I shall work to this end." His response to the resignation of the divisional chairman was to abolish the academic divisions of the college and to adopt a wholly departmental structure. And it wasn't until later, I don't know when, that the divisional structure was reinstituted. Now I want to return to an interesting set of events which had to do with the then Division of Biological Sciences and later the Department of Biological Sciences. It has to do with a name that President Lee sent down to me as chairman of the Division of Biological Sciences from a man who was working as an associate program director, advanced science programs, special projects in science education section of the National Science Foundation. It appears that President Lee had called this man, whose name is Willis Pequeno, to tell him about his plans for the Long Island Center and to solicit his interest in becoming a candidate for a faculty position. Now the date on the letter from Pequeno to John Lee is March the 16th. So Pequeno was obviously contacted sometime before then. And in this letter, he says to Dr. Lee, he says, "I appreciate your call very much." So the Pequeno did not initiate the contact. "The plans that you sketch are of considerable interest to me. The possibility of sharing in the development of the distinguished institution that you envisage has fanned intellectual fires and screened off somewhat a rather provincial desire to return to California." Then he tells about preparing a hasty biographical sketch and so on. And he sent along a page or two of biological information. His main interest was developing electronic instruments for submarine turbulence studies. He got his PhD from UCLA and taught at Pomona College for 20 years before going to the NSF. And then from there that's where we contacted him. Now, in his transmission of this letter, President Lee said, "I'm sending this material to you from Dr. Pequeno for, one, consideration of Dr. Pequeno as a possible advisor to your group, and, or, two, a possible candidate for appointment to the faculty. I should like to discuss with you at the earliest opportunity what plans you may have for Dr. Pequeno's coming here, either for an interview or in some other capacity. The reason I ask this information is not in an effort to press his appointment with you, but simply because if it turns out that you're not interested in his services in the Division of Biological Sciences, I might very well be interested in him for the Institute of Oceanographic Sciences. So I invited Pequeno to come. He visited us on April the 25th and gave a seminar on May the 29th. There was scheduled a meeting by President Lee with the Council of Division of Biological Sciences, which included myself, Bob Smoker, and George Williams, to discuss general questions of submitting a proposal relating to an oceanographic congress and to discuss the various possible candidates for a position relating to such a proposal. And Ralph Johnson and Pequeno were to be discussed, among others. Well, eventually, for reasons of the resignations that took place 2 days before, that meeting was then canceled, and the discussion of oceanography was postponed until the fall. I requested a reimbursement, an honorarium, for Pequeno for his presentation at Oyster Bay, and it eventually came through and was forwarded to me in Boulder, Colorado, where I was for the summer working on the BSCS project.
BSCS, Biological
Sciences Curriculum Study.
Yes, curriculum.
Which started in 60, and then I've been working on it low these many years, including just last two summers ago when I worked on another book for them. I forwarded to him in Washington, and this was under date of 26th of June. Now, he acknowledged that under date of July 3rd, 1961, thank you for your pleasant letters and the voucher. I trust that your BSCS work at Boulder will progress to the full extent of the hopes for it that you expressed to me in April. Early in August, I leave for the Pacific Coast, where I shall visit universities from Seattle to San Diego before leaving for Hawaii and the Pacific Science Congress. One of the valuable features of working with the foundation is the opportunity to meet a very generous sample of the academic community under favorable conditions. I send my best wishes for a profitable summer. Now, he did not once mention in that letter that he had been appointed chairman of the Biological Sciences at Stony Brook. Not a word. And on July 14th, the Bulletin of Long Island Center, Volume 1, Number 2, announces Pequeno's appointment as chairman of the Department of Biological Sciences, effective September the 1st. And on July 17th, I sent him congratulations and told him I had learned of his appointment in the bulletin. Well, Willis Pequeno was, I guess it's fair to say that his heart was never in that position, because he spent very little time on campus. He told us that he was trying to phase out his position in the foundation, therefore he could not teach any courses at Oyster Bay. And he had one or two faculty meetings which were really quite dreadful, and it became clear, I have notes on one of them, and it became quite clear that he had no interest in the department, and B, that he had no idea how to go about organizing or administering a department. We in the department got increasingly agitated by his lack of attention to the details. A couple of times when I met with him in his office, our meetings were always interrupted with calls from his stockbroker in California, what stocks to buy, what stocks to sell, what's the price-earnings ratio on this stock, and so on. And clearly, he was much more interested in that. In the meanwhile, there had been a lot of agitation on campus, and there had been disruption and student demonstrations on campus before the end of the year, mainly in support of Leonard Olson and Alan Austell. And
let's see, were they under attack by that time?
They were under attack. I can't remember the details of that, but one day the students all went out on strike and refused to attend classes. I think after one of these, I can't actually remember what stimulated that, but it may well have been the success in getting Olson removed or transferred to Albany again or something like that. At any rate, both Leonard and Alan Austell felt they could not remain at Stony Brook, and they became part of a task force to advise the King of Jordan on the question of establishing a university in Jordan. And this was an international body, if I remember, which involved quite a bit of travel around the world and lasted for 3 or 4 months and terminated in a large report to the King of Jordan. So I don't remember whether it led to the establishment of a university or not. At any rate, Alan became dean. Sorry?
They were off campus.
They were off campus, yeah. during the fall semester. Yeah. Alan became a dean at the new school upon his return, and Leonard Olson became assistant to the president of the University of Chicago, whose name was Levy, I believe. We don't know exactly, those of us in the trenches, so to speak, don't know exactly what was happening between July and November, but the situation became increasingly tense, and especially between the president and Albany. And through a set of events that I have no knowledge of, John Lee was fired from his post as president, probably in November of 1961, early November of 1961. And his total tenure in office then had been about 10 months, from February to November, 9 or 10 months. And President Hamilton of the Central Office took over the administration of the campus personally. Came down, met with the faculty. He distributed a memo to the faculty under date of November 13th, 1961. So the termination of President Lee's office, term in office, took place sometime before that. And it's interesting. It says, to the faculty of the Long Island Center, we have been through some difficult times. No one has been more troubled by them than I have. While for some time the only possible eventual resolution has been evident to me, I had hoped that it would come about in a different manner. That's an interesting paragraph, and I read into it that he had hoped that Lee would resign, but that they wouldn't have to fire him.
I think they offered to let him resign.
Did they?
Refused.
Yes, he refused. I didn't know that, but that's what one would conclude from this. One thing.